听力课堂，听 class.com。
全国翻译专业资格水平考试辅导丛书，英语口译综合能力三级，第八核。
Unit 15 B Part 1 A A national survey of 1,300 adults showed an increase in auto and air travel expected this year. The survey results showed that some 30.9 million travelers, up 3.4% from last year, will drive 50 miles or more by car this Memorial Day weekend. Another 4.1 million plan to travel by plane, up 5.3% from last year.Memorial Day weekend is the traditional start of the peak summer driving season in the United States. Strong demand and high crude oil prices have pushed average retail gasoline prices up 52 cents from last year to a record $2.02 per gallon, the government said this week. Prices are up to as much as $3 a gallon in some locations. But indications of a recovering economy,including strong employment reports in March and April, have spurred travel, the report said. Respondents to the poll also reported being less concerned than a year ago about security issues, which has also boosted travel plans. Looking beyond the holiday weekend, Americans are expected to break out their suitcases in record numbers the entire summer. Pent-up demand may have contributed to increased travel plans this year.In the spring of 2003, many travelers delayed vacation plans due to the Iraq War. This year, travelers have largely ignored some higher costs in their desire to return to their traveling ways. Many Americans seem willing to absorb the higher costs of foreign travel as well. European travel packages have sold briskly, according to Hughes, despite 10 to 20% price increases caused by the weak dollar.B. 1. I would have spent my holidays in Hong Kong if I hadn't been broke. 2. George was in 3 airplane accidents, but he led a charmed life. 3. Large cities have tried to change commuter habits by encouraging people to ride buses rather than drive their cars. 4.The chances are pretty slim that Nancy will join us for the trip in the summer. 5. The highway was shut down for 4 hours due to a downed power pole. 6. There always seems to be a need to remind workers about their statutory entitlements to holidays and holiday pay. 7.A week's holiday should be equivalent to a worker's normal working week. 8. Added security may have eased the concerns of some travelers. 9. You have the option of having unlimited stopovers over the route for up to 4 months. 10. Despite the threat of terrorism,Travelers jammed Los Angeles International Airport.
Part 2. Each year on the third Monday of January, schools, federal offices, post office, and banks across America close as we celebrate the newest American national holiday. 15 years after Dr. King's death, President Ronald Reagan signed a bill into law.Making the third Monday of January a national holiday, celebrating the birth and life of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. But it was a tough time getting the bill passed. First, a bill had to be introduced by a member of the House of Representatives. The Speaker of the House assigned the bill to a committee where the bill was discussed in detail. Meetings were held where supporters and opposers could discuss their positions.The committee then agreed that bill should be sent to a vote. The Rules Committee scheduled a debate on the issue. The House of Representatives then voted on the bill. It passed the House with a vote of 338 to 90. Then it was sent to the Senate. Again, the issue of the King holiday had to pass through committees and public hearings before a final vote was taken. There were many who opposed the idea. America had only honored two individuals with national holidays, George Washington and Christopher Columbus. Many felt that there were other Americans that deserved a national holiday, such as Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy.
Part 3, Passage 1. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is a celebration for all America, an annual event that is a gift by the famous store to New York City. Every year, the ideas for the parade are new and fresh, and usually even more exciting than the year before. Throughout its history, the parade has reflected changes in popular culture, technological advances, and major historical events. The parade started in 1924 as the Macy's Christmas Parade. The route was longer then, winding from 145th Street and Convent Avenue to Macy's store on 34th Street. 3 years later, cartoonist Tony Sarg designed the first balloons to be used in the parade. In 1934, the famous Hollywood filmmaker Walt Disney introduced the first of three Mickey Mouse balloons along with other characters. Disaster struck in 1941. Thanksgiving Day that year came just 2 weeks before the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and the mood in America was miserable. But what the crowds who saw the parade remembered was that 1941 was the year the Santa Claus balloon burst while being pumped up. There were no balloons and no parade during the years of the Second World War. Happy days were back again in 1945. The initial post-war parade was televised locally for the first time. Then, in 1947, a new parade route was mapped out, one that is still used to this day. Macy's experienced a period of great success in the 1980s, starting with the presence of Superman, the largest balloon ever to appear in the parade, in 1981. Woody Woodpecker and Olive Oil, the first female balloon, appeared in the following year. That year, Macy's employees participated and an estimated 35 million TV viewers watched the parade. Yogi Bear first appeared in 1983, and in 1985, Betty Boop became the 99th balloon. Continuing the list of firsts, superstar Big Bird joined the parade in 1988, and the first snowfall to add holiday sparkle to the excitement of the parade was recorded in 1989.
Passage 2. People hold different views concerning how Valentine's Day began. Some trace it to an ancient Roman festival called Lupercalia. Others connect the event with one or more saints of the early Christian church. Still others link it with an old English belief that birds choose their mates on February 14th. Valentine's Day came from a combination of all three of those sources, plus the belief that spring is a time for lovers. The ancient Romans held the festival of Lupercalia on February 15th to ensure protection from wolves. During this celebration, young men struck people with strips of animal hide. Women took the blows because they thought that the whipping made them more fertile. After the Romans conquered Britain in AD 43, the British borrowed many Roman festivals. Many writers link the festival of Lupercalia with Valentine's Day because of the similar date and the connection with fertility. The early Christian church had at least two saints named Valentine. According to one story, Roman Emperor Claudius II in the AD 200s forbade young men to marry. The emperor thought single men made better soldiers. Another story says Valentine disobeyed the emperor's order and secretly married young couples. Another story says Valentine was an early Christian who made friends with many children. The Romans imprisoned him because he refused to worship their gods. The children missed Valentine and tossed loving notes between the bars of his cell window. This tale may explain why people exchange messages on Valentine's Day. According to another story, Valentine restored the sight of his jailer's blind daughter. Many stories say that Valentine was executed on February 14th, about AD 269. In that year, Saint Pope Galatius I named February 14th as Saint Valentine's Day. People in England probably celebrated Valentine's Day as early as the 1400s. Some historians trace the custom of sending verses on Valentine's Day to a Frenchman named Charles. He was captured and put in prison by the English during the Battle of Agincourt in 1415. On Valentine's Day, he sent his wife a rhymed love letter from his cell in the Tower of London.
Passage 3. There was a time when camping was considered to be a poor way of spending a holiday. Okay for Boy Scouts and poor students, but hardly the thing for sophisticated, comfort-loving adults. The adults have at last discovered that the Boy Scouts have really been on to a good thing all these years. If you go camping, it no longer means that you will be bitten to death by mosquitoes, have to drink dirty coffee, live on corned beef, suffocate or freeze in a sleeping bag. Camping has become the great pursuit of motorists all over the world. All the discomforts associated with it have been gone. For a modest expense, you can have a comfortable insulated tent. For a not so modest expense, you can have a one-storied house, complete with three bedrooms, a living room, a kitchen, and a porch. The portable furniture is light and comfortable. The gas stove boils excellent coffee or grills a tender steak. The icebox keeps the beer and ice cream cold. And for a good night's rest, you literally sleep on air. What more could you want? No wonder the great rush is on. You see, camping has so much to offer. You enjoy absolute freedom. You can do whatever you please. Modern camping sites are well equipped with hot and cold running water and even shops and dance floors. Low-cost holidays make camping an attractive business. But above all, you enjoy tremendous mobility. If you don't like a place, or if it is too crowded, you can simply get up and go. Or you can stay as long as you like. You are the boss. Camping provides you with a real change from everyday living. You get up earlier, go to bed earlier, and develop a hearty appetite. You have enormous opportunity to meet people of various nationalities and to share your pleasures with them. For a few precious weeks in the year, you really adopt a completely different way of life. And that's the essence of true recreation and real enjoyment. Part 4. A powerful car bomb destroyed a nightclub on Indonesia's resort island of Bali on Saturday night, October 12th, killing at least 187 people and injuring more than 300, many of them tourists from Australia, with others including Germans, Canadians, Britons, Swedes, and local Indonesians. The blast left a large round hole at the entrance to the nightclub, located in the center of Kuta, a maze of clubs, restaurants, shops, hotels, and beach bungalows. The explosion came from a jeep and was considered to be the worst act of terror in Indonesia's history. Just seconds before the main blast, a smaller explosion erupted outside another nightclub about 30 meters away. A third bomb exploded near the U.S. Embassy's recreation club in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, which had been evacuated after a bomb threat. There was no claim of responsibility for the blasts, but they came three times a day after the U.S. government issued a worldwide alert for terror attacks. The U.S. ambassador to Jakarta said that he had delivered the latest warning of a likely terror attack in Jakarta to the top leaders of Indonesia just a day before the bombing. The U.S. government repeatedly warned of the likely terror attacks, but reaction was slow, senior U.S. officials said. The various warnings that the U.S. government gave Jakarta in the weeks before the bombing contained no details about when and where attacks might occur, but Washington took the likelihood of an attack seriously, basing its judgment on CIA questioning of an Al-Qaeda operative. The operative, Omar Farouk, was detained in Central Java in June and turned over to the Americans, but only started talking early in September. U.S. officials reacted to his warning about terrorist actions by shutting their embassies in Jakarta and some other capitals around the anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Australia, a staunch U.S. ally, has been on a heightened state of alert since New York and Washington were attacked on September 11th, 2001. The Prime Minister of Australia said in a statement after the Bali blast, "People should get out of their minds that it can't happen here. It can, and it has happened to our own on our doorstep." A reward of $1.08 million has been posted in Australia for the people responsible for the Bali nightclub bombing. And the Prime Minister denied claims that he failed to act on a U.S. intelligence report last month that warned of terrorist threats to tourist spots in Asia. An urgent investigation conducted by Indonesian authorities has recovered traces of C4 plastic explosive at the scene of the bombing in Bali, and the material is similar to the explosive used to bomb the residence of the Philippine ambassador in Jakarta in August 2000. The bombings once again should be a warning for all of us that terrorism is a real danger and potential threat to the national security, said the President of Indonesia. And we will continuously investigate so that the suspected identity of the bombers or a possible link to Al-Qaeda can be uncovered as soon as possible. But the National Defense Minister blamed Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies for the massive bomb attack on international tourists, saying, "We are sure Al-Qaeda is here. The Bali bomb blast is linked to Al-Qaeda with the cooperation of local terrorists." Unit 16. A.
Part 1. A. Americans seem to be gaining self-awareness about how debt-laden they are and have made paying off debt a priority in the new year, beating out weight loss as a resolution for the first time in recent years. According to a new study by Cambridge Credit Counseling, 28% of Americans have said to make slashing debt their number one New Year's resolution in 2004. In 2003, losing weight and shedding debt were equal priorities, and in 2002, losing pounds outweighed cutting credit card debt, the company said. It's quite clear consumers are starting to realize they are in over their heads in debt, Chris Vial, chief operating officer at Cambridge, told Reuters. Consumers have a false sense of financial stability with all the credit extended to them. According to the Federal Reserve, consumer debt totaled $1.977 trillion at the end of October, up $81.9 billion from the end of 2002. One out of three U.S. households is in a position where they are over the limit on credit card accounts or behind in one of their accounts. Also, credit limits were extended to higher levels and gave them the ability to live above their means, said Vial. Over 35 million consumers are facing the reality they are in over their heads with credit card debt. People were saddled with debt. Cambridge Credit Counseling Corporation said a third of those calling in for help in managing their debt expressed frustration with high bank rates and fees. At the same time, just over 23% said incomes have been reduced by lower salaries, less overtime, and layoffs. Other priorities in the new year for consumers include getting a better job and improving personal relationships.
B. 1. In order to become a CEO, you have to think like a CEO. 2. Maintaining and enhancing business relations need a regular dose of direct contact. 3. If you're feeling overwhelmed in this intense competition, you're not alone. 4. In the era of the internet, your home is as professional as the top floor of any office building. 5. If you want to learn about your business, you should listen to voices of experience. 6. Credit counselors helped us work out a repayment plan to pay down our debt. 7. The facts suggest that becoming rich for most Americans is largely a matter of choice. 8. A larger economy than Germany, China now is in a race with Japan for the second place, just behind the United States. 9. U.S. companies have to develop a different presence in China, so there are few 100% American-owned companies. 10. Only in the past 500 years has the West been ahead of China.
Part 2. Recently, non-governmental organizations and activists were successful at gaining the attention of the world press and the world consumers. Of course, not every consumer is interested in the more fashionable food-related issues, but how retailers respond to the existence of the issue is telling. Walmart Global Retailer would continue to address social issues by providing low-cost products to give the poor more buying power and a richer lifestyle. The French retailer would consider social issues with an eye on the environment and human intervention in the food supply. While their differing approaches may be perfectly adapted to consumers in their home markets, globalization is going to bring multinational retailers into greater conflict. The resulting clash probably won't result in a clear victory of one viewpoint over another, but rather an evolution of thinking that will be applied country by country as the situation requires. Thus, in a rapidly shifting retail environment, globalization is most likely to speed the rate of change by speeding the transfer of new ideas. Experience gained by multinationals exposed to a wide variety of retail operations will afford a critical advantage and a broad scope of resources they will bring to bear in local markets.
Part 3, Passage 1. Do you think the housing market will crash and prices will go down? If so, what time frame do you suggest? You're not the only one who's worried about whether the housing market is another bubble ready to burst. Yes, it's certainly likely that, at some point, housing prices will stop rising as quickly as they have been recently and may even fall somewhat. But earlier dire predictions of an impending housing crash in recent times haven't come about. One reason a crash is unlikely is that the housing market is structured much differently from investment markets like stocks or commodities. A selling panic, for example, is much less likely in the housing market because most houses are primary residences. If everyone wanted to sell at once, where would we all live? The impact on average prices also tends to be gradual because housing price trends are very local. A lot has to do with how the supply of housing in a given area compares to demand. In some markets, where the local economy is in decline and everyone is leaving, house prices can and do fall. But in areas where the economy is strong and there's little space for new construction, prices will most likely continue to rise. There are plenty of doomsday scenarios out there. A prolonged steep recession could eventually bring steep housing prices declines. A sharp rise in interest rates would likely cool demand for houses and force prices lower, because potential buyers would qualify for smaller mortgages. but many homeowners have locked in low rates and wouldn't feel the impact of higher rates on their monthly mortgage payments.
Passage 2. For over 20 years, Stephen Ballmer has been the behind-the-scenes guru at Microsoft, handling the financial aspects and corporate decisions, while Bill Gates took care of the products and technical vision. Now CEO of Microsoft, Ballmer is one of the richest men in the world with a fortune estimated at $25 billion. Ballmer was born on March 24, 1956 in Detroit, Michigan. His father, a Ford Motor Company employee, was a Swiss immigrant who had married a Jewish American woman. They encouraged him to pursue academic goals. Getting a perfect 800 on his math SATs got him into Harvard University, where he quickly became friends with Bill Gates. The two were poles apart. Gates was a computer nerd, while Ballmer was an outgoing business type. But those differences made them friends for life. Gates managed to convince Ballmer to work with him permanently. In 1980, they agreed on a salary of $50,000 and a 7% ownership of the startup. From this moment, one of the most famous business partnerships was born. Gates would handle the technological vision, while Ballmer was responsible for the company's financial evolution. Their relationship, which they both describe as a marriage, persisted to the point where Gates gave his best friend the CEO position when he stepped down in 2000. Steve Ballmer assumed full management responsibility for the company, which came at a time when Microsoft's new vision was to empower people through software. Some people believe that Ballmer is a ferocious enemy, a man that will stop at nothing to get a business edge over other software companies. Nevertheless, he's the only American billionaire to reach this financial situation by working for someone else.
Passage 3. The large American energy services company, Enron, failed 2 years ago. It had been the seventh largest company in the United States. More than 20 people have been charged with financial crimes related to the company's hidden debt, inflated profits, and accounting tricks. On January 22nd, Enron's former chief accounting officer faced charges of helping Enron cheat investors and others. Richard Causey said he is not guilty. He says he believed all of Enron's financial records were correct and followed rules called the Generally Accepted Accounting Standards. The government says Mr. Causey used his knowledge of accounting to make Enron look profitable and cause the price of Enron stock to increase. Mr. Causey is an important person in the Enron case. The charges came soon after another top official of Enron agreed to a deal. Andrew Fastow was the chief financial officer at Enron. On January 14th, he admitted guilt for two criminal acts. He will be sentenced to 10 years in prison. Fastow had faced more than 90 separate charges. The deal depends on evidence he will offer in the future. Fastow admitted that he hid the financial situation at Enron by using partnerships. He admitted using partnerships for his own gain. He has been forced to return more than $23 million and other property to the government. What is different between the two cases is that Mr. Fastow has admitted to cheating Enron. Mr. Causey is charged with cheating investors. Part 4. Businesses are structured to meet different needs. One basic difference involves who is responsible for the business. Another involves how long the organization can stay in business. Today, we begin a report about ways that businesses are organized under United States tax law. The simplest form of business is called an individual proprietorship. The word proprietor comes from French and Latin words for property owner. The proprietor owns all the property of the business and is responsible for it. This means the proprietor receives all the profits. But this also means that the proprietor is responsible for all the debts of the business. Also, any legal action against an individual proprietorship is taken against the owner. The law recognizes no difference between the owner and the business. Most small businesses in the United States are individual proprietorships. The Census Bureau says there are more than 12 million of them. United States tax law has simpler reporting requirements for these kinds of businesses. One person may be able to complete all the tax documents required. Another kind of business is the partnership. Two or more people go into business together. An agreement is usually needed to state how much of the partnership each person controls. They can end the partnership at any time. A partnership is often called a pass-through entity. Money passes through it to the individual partners. The federal government does not tax partnerships, but the partners are taxed on the payments they receive. Doctors, lawyers, and accountants often form partnerships to share the profits and risks of doing business. A husband and wife can form a business partnership. The Census Bureau says there are more than 1 million American partnerships. Partnerships and individual proprietorships are usually small business organizations. They have a limited life. They exist only as long as the owners are alive. There are some big business organizations. The most complex is the corporation. It is designed to have an unlimited lifetime. Investors in a corporation own stock. This is a share of the ownership. Investors can trade their shares or keep them as long as the company is in business. Investors may get paid dividends, a small amount of money for each share they own. A corporation is a legal entity, a being separate from its owners. Shareholders are not responsible for the debts of the corporation. Shareholders can only lose the money they invest in stock. The corporation itself is responsible for its debts. A board of directors controls the corporate policies. The directors appoint top company officers. The directors might or might not hold any shares in the corporation. United States tax law recognizes two general kinds of corporations. The first is known as the C corporation. C corporations were the only kind for many years. Most pay taxes on their profits. Shareholders also pay taxes on dividends they receive. Some people call this double taxation. So, in 1986, the government created the S corporation. An S corporation is not taxed by the federal government. It is like a partnership. It can pass its profits and losses on to its owners. But S corporations cannot have more than 75 shareholders. There are other restrictions as well. The Federal Tax Agency says that in 2000, about 57% of corporations in the United States were S corporations. Their number has grown each year since the start. Yet they control only a small part of the value of all corporations. Not all corporations are traditional businesses that sell stock. The American Red Cross, for example, is organized as a non-profit corporation. Corporations can be huge or not so huge. They may have a few major shareholders, or the ownership may be spread widely among the general public. Incorporating offers a way for business to gain the investments they need to grow. Unit 16. B.
Part 1. A. Each year, 15 to 20 million used cars change hands, a rate almost double that of new cars. The next time you buy a new car, you may choose to sell one as well. To obtain the greatest possible return on your investment, here's what you'll want to do. Most shoppers believe a used car that looks good probably is good.
Your first step should be a good wash and wax. Clean the interior, shampooing the carpeting and upholstery. Remove items that might rattle or look untidy. Tighten loose trim. For a late model or vintage auto, consider a professional detail job. This includes cotton swabbing tiny nooks and crannies, touching up paint, and giving tires and plastic surfaces a polymer shine. The $50 to $150 investment will likely spark more interest in your car. Look in the phone book under automotive detailing or ask a local garage, car wash, or new car dealer. Be sure to have an oil change, fluid checks, grease job, and tune-up. These reflect a well-cared-for automobile. Obviously, a flat tire or a broken starter must be repaired, but major work should be avoided. It isn't cost-effective. One caveat? Safety hazards, bad brakes for example, should be repaired. If they aren't, make sure you mention any such areas of concern to the purchaser. By selling a car before it is 3 years old or has not been driven more than 40,000 miles, you often avoid replacing wear and tear items such as tires and brakes. When cars are 6 years old or reach 70,000 miles, repair costs begin to rise.
B. 1. I wish I'd gotten the craft fair earlier to see each and every craft on display because they went so quickly. 2. He should be glad he's breaking even, though many people were in red last year. 3. I'm fast with a keyboard, so I'm sure I'll be able to pull everything off by then. 4. The vehicle review gives the new model a poor rating on its suspension, and the company might be forced to do a recall. 5. The book's been selling like hotcakes since it was launched 3 weeks ago. 6. This website brings you with the latest scoop on various business areas. 7. The managing director suggested to the board that the best way of obtaining capital for the expansion program would be to sell the company's headquarters to a finance house and then lease them back. 8. When the firm started to lose money, John resigned, and Jane was left holding the baby. 9. He's a shrewd businessman who's popular with his staff. 10. She set up in business as a management consultant.
Part 2. When I first wrote our manager's guide, I put in a quote from Marcus Aurelius about the inevitability of change. We hammer home that not to change is to be in the process of dying, of not meeting the market as it is. We applaud people who instigate change. We don't hang people who try something new that doesn't work out, because that's the easiest way to ossify an organization, to crucify the people who are trying to innovate. We have meetings each year to review our strategy, to make sure we're not drifting out of our core competencies, and to make sure we're correctly seeing where the markets are going. Once we've bought into that as a senior management team, we then communicate that in every way we can think of. We put it in the mission statement and the employee handbooks. We tie our business plans to it. We tie our incentive plans to it. We have one of the biggest industrial TV networks in the world, and we use it to make certain our employees understand what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. We make our managers treat our employees and contractors with dignity. They're sure not going to deliver the kind of service that FedEx is known for unless you deal with them on that basis.
Part 3, Passage 1. What do we think of when we hear the word business? Some of us think of our jobs, others of the merchants they deal with as consumers, and still others of the millions of firms that make up the world's economy. This broad, all-inclusive term can be applied to many kinds of enterprises. Business provides most of our employment as well as the products we enjoy. Business consists of all profit-seeking activities and enterprises that provide goods and services necessary to an economic system. Some businesses produce tangible goods, such as automobiles, breakfast cereals, and computer chips. Others provide services, such as insurance, car rentals, and lodging. Business is the economic pulse of a nation, the means through which society's standard of living improves. Profits are a primary mechanism for accomplishing these goals. Accountants and business people define profits as the difference between a company's revenues and expenses. Profits are the financial rewards received by successful business people who take the risks involved in business. Just as important as profits are the social and ethical responsibilities that successful businesses must meet. This means companies must be responsible in their dealings with employees, consumers, supplies, competitors, government, and the general public if they are to succeed in the long run. Robert D. Haas, chairman and CEO of Levi Strauss & Company, says, "A company's values, what it stands for, what its people believe in, are crucial to its competitive success. Indeed, values drive the business." Haas feels so strongly about the social responsibilities of business that he drafted an aspiration statement for Levi Strauss that emphasizes the importance of affirming the best of our company's traditions, closing gaps that may exist between principles and practices, and updating some of our values to reflect contemporary circumstances.